Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Microsoft Teams is helping Priority Bicycles transform the way they work. After closing their New York City showroom, they started doing virtual visits on Teams. Now, people from all over the world can come into their showroom. Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams.
Welcome to the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast. Time for the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast.
What's up, everybody? It is that time of the week again, and this week is special. It is the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast, and what a Super Bowl week we have. In the midst of this Super Bowl week, we always want to hear about quarterbacks. We have quarterbacks that are on the move, and we have quarterbacks talking about quarterbacks that want to be on the move. We will preview Super Bowl 55. And thinking about 55, we will talk with number 55. That's right, 55 on 55. That is Willie McGinnis. No one knows Tom Brady better. We will talk to Tom Brady's, let's just call him, great friend. But let's start with the quarterbacks that have been on the move this week. Oh, my God. Did you guys see that trade? Matthew Stafford and Jared Goff trade. Rams send Jared Goff to Detroit with first round pick in 2022, a first round pick in 2023, and a 2021 third round pick. That's what Detroit gets for Matthew Stafford. And the Rams, they get their quarterback. And let me tell you something. I want to talk about this first. We'll talk about who won that trade and all of that. I mean, but I want to start with this. Matthew Stafford in a Rams uniform playing for the Rams in the style of that offense, it is a perfect match. It's a perfect match. Matthew Stafford can throw the ball great on the move. And he's been hiding in purgatory in Detroit. That's what I call purgatory. Purgatory is someplace stuck between heaven and hell and just floating. It ain't the worst in the world, nowhere near the best, but you're just floating. It's a nebulous place, and he's out there in a nebulous place in Detroit. He's been stuck out there in Detroit. Now in L.A., you leave Detroit for L.A. You have that kind of talent. It's going to be incredible watching these guys put it together, the Rams having the talent that they have on defense right now, and then getting a quarterback that could still make any play on the football field with his arms. Matthew Stafford is a huge talent, huge talent. Just didn't have the people around him to get things done in Detroit. And I've always believed if he had the right team around him or put in a right situation, Matthew Stafford could have great, great success. And now that he's with Sean McVay, and now that he's with the Rams, the gifts that they have in L.A., he will have great success. You can't tell me I'm sitting here in Tampa right now for the Super Bowl. You cannot tell me that Tom Brady didn't have something to do with this trade. When they saw Tom Brady go right over to Tampa and get the Buccaneers to a Super Bowl, they were like, okay, this is what we're trying to do. And the Rams have been up front with it. They're not trying to grow. They're trying to go right now. That's why they traded away first-round picks for Jalen Ramsey. That's why they're all in on everything they're trying to get done right now. That's why they're all in on Matthew Stafford. They're not playing the long game. They're playing the short game, the right now game. I thought that was a great move getting this kid in. Now, I must admit I'm amazed at how far they have fallen out of love with Jared Goff in such a short time when they just gave him that big contract. They just gave him a big contract. And now they're back here saying this thing is not working. So this can't be an evaluation on talent. This has to be some personality thing that has gone wrong. And they feel that the personality, what I mean by that, that Jared Goff and Sean McVay are someone that's not getting along. They feel it's best to just separate. I find this interesting that with the Rams, when it came down to quarterback or coach, they took coach. With the Eagles, when it came down to quarterback or coach, they took quarterback. Both had given these quarterbacks an enormous amount of money. The Rams went with coach. The Eagles went with quarterback. I don't know just yet what that means. I think we have to wait to see the fallout or the play after to see what that means. But I found that interesting. Jared Goff now with the Detroit Lions. And the Detroit Lions, when you're giving up, when you're gathering that kind of haul for a talent, it's a clear signal and a clear sign that's saying we are in rebuilding mode. We are trying to go in a different direction and put it together. I think it was a good situation for Detroit in moving Matthew Stafford just to try something else. It's hard to try something else when you have that veteran quarterback that's been there for a long time and has had great success. I'll never forget some of the conversations I've had with Coach Johnson, and even watching Coach Johnson when he left Dallas, sat a couple of years, and then went and picked up on the Miami Dolphins, and he had Dan Marino there, and I may have shared with you guys how much I love Dan Marino. I thought, great, now Dan, since I didn't get the chance to give Dan his Super Bowl, now he will get a Super Bowl. You know, because when I was playing at the University of Miami, my good friends were the Mark brothers, Mark Duper and Clay. We ran around Miami together, and I always told those guys when we would be hanging out, I said, man, listen, you know, when I leave the University of Miami and come on and play with you guys, man, I'm going to make sure we get a Super Bowl. Oh, man, dude, man, shut up, man. You ain't going to do that, man. What do you mean? You were trying to say we can't do it? I said, no, I'm not trying to say y'all can't do it. Y'all hadn't done it, though, but we will do it when I get there. You know, we used to have fun like that talking on Sundays on the Bay. Sundays on the Bay. I can't even tell you about the moments we had on Sundays on the Bay. Ooh, that's right there on the Bay. Everybody pull up with the yachts and everything. The girls come out in their bikinis. You have your little adult beverages and everything. And I was hanging out with NFL players. I was college dude. Even though they were in the NFL, we were winning the championships. So, you know, hey, I'm sitting here with them bad boys, people coming up to me saying, boy, where to play, Mike? I said, yeah, that was fun. I digress. This ain't about me. I'm sorry. I kind of digressed right there. We were talking about Jared Goff and what he can do over with Detroit. And I was telling you about Matthew Stafford sometimes need to be moved because Dan Marino, when they brought in help for Dan Marino, even trying to get him that Super Bowl, it was hard for Coach Johnson to get him to turn around and say, let's run the ball. And the quarterback, he's on the field. He's running the show. You know, you're trying to run the ball more, and the quarterback has gotten here because he's thrown the ball. So you send in a run on third and three or third and four, and he changes the play. What can a head coach do? You can't pull Dan Marino and put in the backup. You see what I'm saying? So sometimes when Matthew Stafford has been there for so long, moving him gives the coach a reset on the whole team because there's no one to override the coach now. Matthew Stafford, like Dan Marino, has the ability to override the coach. Now, Jared Goff, who hadn't earned that ability yet, it's probably gone because he was trying to override McVay. And McVay was probably saying, I don't know. But he's probably saying, wait a minute now. Now you're good with my tutelage and my guidance. You're not good enough to override me. So everybody gets moved. And I think they get moved for each betterment. Jared Goff, in Detroit, man, you have less problems hanging over you. It's, you know, you can learn to play the game of football without worrying about the press covering you like you get the coverage in L.A. because it's such a big market and everybody's focused on you. Matthew Stafford's been probably yearning for a market like this. So it makes a good trade. But look at what they got for him. Oh, my God. It's Matthew Stafford. You get two first-rounders and a third round pick for Matthew Stafford? That's a good haul for the Detroit Lions, man. And you get you a young quarterback like Jared Goff, and if you could salvage Jared Goff and start putting some real talent around him with all these assets you have, that could be a good turnaround for Detroit. It remains to be seen, since so much in this league now starts with the quarterback, and we certainly know that Jared Goff has had some issues here lately at the quarterback position. I can't wait to see if they can salvage that next year. But Matthew Stafford bringing in that haul brings us to another thing. If Matthew Stafford is worth two first-rounders and a third, what is the next guy worth when the next guy has been dubbed the Michael Jordan of football and has played like he's a Michael Jordan of football? If Matthew Stafford brought you two first-rounders and a third-rounder, where do you start the bidding for Deshaun Watson? Where do we start the bidding for Deshaun Watson when they gave you that haul for Matthew Stafford? You know, you start the bidding right there. You know they're going to at least get two first-rounders for Deshaun Watson. Maybe three or four. Because everybody's talking now about Deshaun Watson and him wanting to be traded. This is going to be interesting to watch. And it has everybody going crazy right now. Brett Favre has talked. Brett Favre said when you get paid a ton of money to do a certain job, just do it. And let the chips fall where they may. Just do it. That went crazy. Everybody went crazy when Brett Favre gave those comments. And this one thing I do, guys. This one thing I do. Whenever I'm making a comment on someone that may be walking in the same area that I've walked in, and especially if I walked in that area and I've had some issues walking in that area, then I have to self-indict. I have to self-indict. Like when a kid makes a bad decision and I have to address it on TV, address it. I have to say, now listen, you know, I certainly know about making bad decisions. That's what you call self-indicting, to make sure I clearly state that, yeah, I made a bad decision before. I certainly know, you know, about making bad decisions. And then I can give my commentary. Brett Favre, did he self-indict here? When he comes out and talks about, wait, we get paid a ton of money to do a certain job, and just do it. You get paid a ton of money to do a certain thing, just do it. Brett Favre, you were in this same situation. You know, and I saw where they were talking about when you demanded a trade because your team did not go get Randy Moss. So all I'm saying, I don't mind you having an opinion, but if you leave yourself open by not self-indicting, then guys like me have to bring that up because that's the reality. How can you not get what Deshaun Watson is talking about, but you got what you were talking about when you didn't think your organization was doing what it needed to do to get to a championship? And you know where I stand on this, people. I stand with the athlete on this right here. I stand with the athlete. Not only Brett Favre talking, Dick Vermeil has been saying some things. I love Dick Vermeil. Let's play that sound. I want you to listen to what Dick Vermeil said. Play that sound, Sean.
Well, I think they changed his diapers, okay? His contract, nowhere in his contract does it say that he's involved in making the decisions, who coaches or who leads the organization. And I think when players get outside the role of what they really are, he's a great NFL football player and always has been a great kid. But I think he just shuts his mouth and becomes a better football player and lead the football team and let the leaders of the organization lead him. To me, he's going to only play one place. Now, I don't have any more knowledge about Houston. I used to have a little bit more because I knew the head coach. But I just don't see him playing anyplace else. And I see him calming down, maturing a little bit, and go be a good football player and earn the money they're paying him.
Blows my mind. Now, I really do. I love Dick Vermeil. And I know he coached for the Eagles, but I watched that Vince Papale story, stuff like that, that made me love Dick Vermeil and the way he turned the Eagles around and everything. But right here, he's out of line and out of touch. He's out of line and out of touch and sounds a little rigid. That means stuck in your ways. What are you talking about? Let the guys that are paid to lead the team lead the team. Are you watching how they are leading? That's what I mean, out of touch. You must not be watching. They trade away to one of the best receivers in the league for nobody. For nobody. They've given up talent, and they've headed in a horrible direction. The culture. They're talking about the culture over there. And this is what kills me. In the end, we are not going to be talking about what's the GM name and he didn't succeed and he didn't do this. We will only be talking about the athlete and especially the quarterback. Don't tell me the quarterback shouldn't have any say in anything when everything we say is about him. Nobody's talking about GMs. And these guys have done such a poor, horrible job. If Deshaun Watson did their job, his job, like the GMs are doing their jobs, they would have cut him, gotten rid of him, and called him every name in the book. He's a dog, nothing. That's what basically would have happened. I mean, the people in your city would call you every name in the book. We wasted a draft pick. You didn't do this. You didn't do that. They come down hard on the quarterbacks. But when the GMs and all those guys don't do their job, it's a whole different thing. I'm telling you, in order to win, every man must be held accountable. And if you don't hold every man accountable, you can count on not winning. Brett Favre talking about Deshaun Watson without self-indicting. That I'm not a big fan of. And I think the self-indictment gives him some power. He can say, listen, I've been in this situation, and I know. And then you can give your opinion. That gives you some power. Dick Vermeil, I love you, man. I do. But telling people to let the guys that are supposed to lead the team when they've been leading the team to this rut spot that we are in, that doesn't make much sense anyway. And I can leave the guys leading the team, but I don't have to be here. And that's what Deshaun Watson is saying. I will leave that guy, that group that's leading the team to lead the team. I just want them to lead the team without me. That's what I want them to do. Lead that team without me because I see the kind of leadership that is with that team. I talked about this. I broke this story when D-Hop was going through it in Houston well over a year ago. And this is still the fallout, still happening. This man sees the kind of success that Patrick Mahomes and other guys are having. And he knows he has that talent, but he doesn't have that organization. There's nothing wrong with a man wanting to win. That's what we always talk about. That's what we get on people. We don't think that winning is what they want to do. We don't think that winning is the core. We don't think winning drives them. And then when they say, I do want to win bad, and I want to win more than anything, and obviously we're not going to win here. Maybe I should make a move. We all jump on them and kill them. It's just not right because we're doing what they call in the Bible what Didymus did. That means we're speaking out of both sides of our mouth. This kid, Deshaun Watson, he wants out so he can have a chance to go and have a career that he can reminisce on and be well. That's what I tell young dudes. I say, listen, man, I'm an old man. I'm reminiscing on my history. You're a young man. You are writing yours. Write well so you can reminisce well. That's what you make sure you do. And in this business, you can't write well unless the people around you are helping you write well because they are collecting the talent. There's nothing wrong with what Deshaun Watson is doing right now. Either get better in that front office, and I've given you opportunities to get better, or get me out of here and let me go win some football games. Speaking of football games, we got Super Bowl 55, and we will talk to number 55, Willie McGinnis. Microsoft Teams is helping Priority Bicycles reinvent the way they work. When the pandemic hit, the bike shop had to close their New York City showroom. They found a way to reopen by doing virtual visits on Teams. Now, the team can meet with two or three times the number of customers than they could before. And people from all over the world can visit their showroom, learn more about their story and others at Microsoft.com/Teams. As I said, joining the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast, right here, right now, from Super Bowl 55. He is my man, number 55. And let me just tell you, let me just give you the real spin right here. This man went to Long Beach Poly. I love hearing about that high school. Went from Long Beach Poly to USC in college. That's a hell of a place to start. High school and college right there in California. And then he was the fourth pick of the 94 draft. Number one draft pick, fourth pick in the draft, 94 to the New England Patriots. He's a three-time Super Bowl winner, two-time Pro Bowler. He's in the Patriots Hall of Fame. 5'5", Willie McGinnis. Willie, how are you doing, buddy?
Hey, playmaker, I'm good, man. I'm out here. I'm in Tampa. I'm hanging out with you. I'm doing the show. Hey, we got a Super Bowl. A lot of people doubted we would get to this point. And here we are doing shows throughout the week for one of the probably the most epic Super Bowls we've had in a long time.
Willie, I won't say probably the most epic. This is the most epic Super Bowl, Willie. There's a lot of things that right. Even during the shows all week that I've recognized and noticed how you and I agree. So it's a lot of things I want to get into that's going on around here.
Okay.
It's a lot of mess going on. And I love greatness, Willie. I love greatness. But I want to wait till you be great and do great. And we're giving a lot of people greatness here before they reach where they're supposed to get. So I want to dive into all that, Willie. But take me back first, Will. I want you to take me back, Will. You won Super Bowl 36, 37, 39. Which ones did you win? Super Bowl 36, 38, and 39, right? Three-time Super Bowl champion. That first Super Bowl, Will, 36, man. Tell me about it, man. It was against the Rams. I remember this like yesterday because the Rams, remember, we had won back-to-back, and the Rams were trying to do it now. We in back-to-back, and then they came in to play you guys, and all you guys came out together as a team, as a unit. The Rams had all kinds of stars, man. Take me back to that moment, man, and what did a young Willie McGinnis think going into that Super Bowl?
Well, what was special about that year, Irv, is remember 9/11 had hit and our country was going through, you know, major, major, major grief. And we had lost a lot of Americans and it was about together. It was about, you know, us as a nation being one and all those different things. So when that happened earlier in the year and we also lost a coach, there was a lot of things that kind of happened to us and our team and our country simultaneously. So what we decided to do was that whatever we do, it was going to be together. It was going to be team versus everybody else. And I think when we united as a country and everybody, you know, talking USA and we coming together and nothing could take us down, we took that same mentality. So going into that season, that's why we did the introduction as one, as a team. We felt we were representing America, the red, white, and blue. You know, those are our colors with the gray. Those are our colors. So we figured that we took on that same persona. And going against the Rams in the Super Bowl is when actually Brady got his chance because Drew Bledsoe, who had just signed a $100 million contract, got hurt in the Jets game. So Brady got his start. Then Brady got hurt, and Drew Bledsoe ended up starting in the AFC Championship. Right. So a lot of people thought Drew was going to take us into the
and played Super Bowl. Well, and he played well.
And played damn good.
Played,
and everybody was like, okay. Drew's got it back. Nah, Belichick had the intuition to say, we're staying with the kid. And he takes a lot now that he's not with Brady, but also remember, he is the one who made the decision to continue to stay with Brady after that big game Drew had in the AFC Championship. And we're playing against the Rams, as you mentioned, the greatest show on turf. We're hearing about throughout the week, they're getting measured for the double rings because they're going to go back to back. Nobody is giving the Patriots any respect. Nobody is talking about how prolific our offense is or our defense, and nobody really cares. It's all about the fancy toys with the Rams, how explosive those receivers are. Marshall Faulk at running back. Kurt Warner's throwing for this many yards. They had a top three defense at the time, and we were just there. Hey, we were just happy to be there, right? Just give us a ticket. Let us come out there. Let us get whooped on and let the Rams walk away and go back-to-back for the championship. But we had other plans, Mike. And being the biggest underdog, one of the biggest underdogs maybe in Super Bowl history, one of, we took that game personal. We prepared hard. We wanted to be a physical, ugly game. We made it that way. And by the grace of God, man, and a lot of execution and players believing in our and what the game plan was, we went out, we executed it to a T. And that right there, 2001, winning the Super Bowl versus the Rams, started that Patriot legacy and dynasty.
You know, you said something in there, man, and Will, it really blows my mind. And I know in this world, we always want to divide and conquer. That's what we do. We want to divide and conquer. And yeah. And you see now where everybody's talking about Brady, and I'm just bringing it up now because you mentioned it. I want to throw this out. Everybody's talking about Brady, and they're trying to divide it. Oh, well, who's more important? Who's more important? When I hear you talk about it, It sounds like that just grades on you. That gets under your skin when people are trying to pull that away. Talk to me about that.
I think it's disrespectful, Mike. And I did the media section for the network earlier. Media, you know, we talked to a lot of different people in the media, and I think it's very disrespectful because you understand you are part of a great organization. Do you know how much teamwork it takes from starting with ownership? Like our ownership, the Kraft family had to give us the resources and put all these pieces in place and understand it. They had to go out and get Belichick. They had to be able to pay for these players, build the new stadium, all the different things that they provided for us. It started with ownership and then a great coaching staff. You got to have a blueprint. You got to have a direction. And when Bill Belichick came in, he had the blueprint, he had the direction, and he had a script of what type of player he wanted. Smart, physical, tough, team over individualism. And he got coaches that understood that. And then he went out and kept a core group of players. You know, myself, Bruschi, Ty Law, Lawyer Malloy, you know, Teddy Bruschi, Ted Johnson, guys like that. Troy Brown.
And we'll send the message to the rest of the locker room. This is how we do things.
This is how we're going to do it. And then he started to put all the other pieces in place with draft and free agency. And our first year, we went 5-11. And I said, going into 5-11 our first year, I had more motivation that going into that next season than I did when we went to the Super Bowl in 96 because I saw the vision. It took so much from every level to create that culture, that Patriot way. And that's before Brady got there, that Patriot way that it's disrespectful to say, is it one coach? Is it one player? If the players don't buy into the system, no matter how great your system is, if they don't buy in, if you got a bunch of individuals that's selfish, it don't work. Okay? If the coaches don't devise a great system and have the blueprint and they're prepared and they can go out and evaluate talent, and bring those type of players into a system that's going to execute the game plan, it don't work. So equally, without getting long into this,
right?
Because I find it disrespectful outsiders who don't understand how hard it is to not only build a team, but to build a successful team that's lasted almost two decades of winning and playoffs and championships and Super Bowls to say who is more important. There's too many other factors, Mike, that go into that. So equally, the players, the coaches, the ownership, the staff, And then all that stuff has to be consistent. Consistent over that amount of time. And you got to continue to get men to buy into that system and put team over individualism. It's not something you can just throw together.
It's not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing. And it runs me crazy too. Well, I ain't gonna lie. It runs me crazy. I'm like, stop, people. Like, let's stop doing this. Let's just stop. And I don't mind if they even put caveats on it saying, yeah, boy, we see how important Tom is. But Tom, what Tom has done as he moved on to Tampa and all, he's taken exactly what he learned from Belichick over there. He wouldn't be able to. How can you say it's about him when he's using the same stuff Belichick taught? You know, and that's the part that blows my mind. I think he's the greatest coach ever. I don't care what you say, ever. And it is disrespectful, like you said, for us to be trying to parse out these things and go after him. That's what they're doing, going after him, which blows my mind. Relationships break up. I saw it with Jerry and Jimmy. I saw it after back-to-back Super Bowls, you know. I still get on Jimmy. I said, we could have had a run like the Patriots, man. Y'all couldn't get that stuff together. You know what I'm saying? Because it takes so much, Will. It really does, man. So,
And Mike, the other thing is, if you look at all the players that left New England, okay?
Right.
Brady's like when Montana left San Fran, that's kind of like what was the wow factor, right? Brady left. I left. Richard Seymour left. Ty Law left. Lawyer Malloy left. Like, I can – Mike Vrabel left. Logan Mankins left, the guard. Like, I can go down the line of all the players that left. There's only a few players that played their entire career as Patriot, and I really wanted to, but the business gets in the way, right? Salary caps get in the way. Injuries get in the way. Free agency gets – everything gets in the way. So when we talk about all these things, we forget there's also a business element to a lot of this success as well. We've switched GMs, right? The only thing that's been in place for that many years,
right?
Ownership, Belichick, maybe Josh McDaniels for like a large part of that, and Tom Brady. A lot of those other moving parts have changed constantly. Changed. So how can you take one away from the other? There will never be a Brady. I'm tired of the comparisons. I'm tired of people trying to say that he's the this, he's that. You got to earn that. And there's other things that Brady will tell you that took place that helped him throughout his entire career. But there will never be another Brady. If you want to be whoever you want to be, you got to create your own legacy. But there's other factors that play into it. And you will see as you go through that long voyage. Brady's been in the league 21 years, 43 years old. You will see Aaron Rodgers, 16, 17 years. He's had a flu of talented receivers on the offense. One Super Bowl. Drew Brees, he's had a flu of talented receivers and players on offense. One Super Bowl. It ain't easy. And what Pat Mahomes is doing now is incredible. It's special.
It's incredible.
But how long can you keep all the pieces and everything together before you say, okay, now I got to change everything up and I got to have success in this system with this personnel group. Oh, I got to switch it up again. This guy's a free agent. He's leaving. They're leaving. We got to keep switching it up. How long can you keep all those things in place?
But right now, Will, is what I'm talking about.
More years? Can Andy Reid stay there for 15 more years?
Right.
Think about it.
Right. And you hit the nail on the head. And let's just go right at that elephant in the room, because what we're talking about is even here in Super Bowl week, right here, Super Bowl 55, all you are hearing is people have anointed Patrick Mahomes and even call him the young GOAT. What's his oxymoron running? There's no such thing. You can't be a young GOAT. You're either a GOAT or you're not. And if you're the GOAT, that means you've gotten time in. So you can't say he's a young goat, but that's what we say. And everybody's projecting this man to take over Tom Brady. But you just mentioned it. Dude, when you're doing it with this talent, can you do this with other different talents coming in? And that, Will, it remains to be seen. It remains to be seen. We can't say it until we see it. I want to see it. And it's not as easy. And that's what I'm talking about. And that's the part that gets under my skin. I think Patrick, like you said, he's going to be great. He's going to be great. He's been great. But come on, man. Let's not do a disservice to the game and everything and everybody that's played in this game since it conceived. And those guys you mentioned had won Super Bowl with. Nobody would have said that when they first started. Nobody thought Aaron Rodgers would have one Super Bowl right now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it's mind-boggling that we run that race and just go. And I think it's just people want to knock Brady off their top rope. You know what I'm saying? That's what it is. We want to write the story going up, Will, and we want to write a falling story.
Don't they do it with Jordan all the time?
Like, yes.
Don't they do it with Jordan all the time?
Right.
And I think that's the price of being great. But the other price besides accolades and winning championships and that is how do you make other people around you great? And
right.
And there are very few players in any sport that have that innate ability. And I would say with Pat Mahomes, he is a young phenom, and he has the opportunity to have all those things, but he also has to have all those other factors in place. He has ability. He has a great personality. He is the kind of guy that he makes other players around him great. He has all those attributes, okay, as a young player. But like you mentioned earlier, we throw the word great and GOAT around too easily. I listen to a lot of these guys talk. A guy can have a good game. He's great. He's not great. Because the great ones do it for decades. They'll do it for 10, for 50 to 60 games in a row. Like, it's great. Like, Ben Roethlisberger, he has two Super Bowls, right? He has a couple of Super Bowls. He's been in the game a long time. I'm just talking about other quarterbacks with multiple Super Bowls. That's Eli just retired. Eli is the only other quarterback that had multiple Super Bowls. Who else are we talking about? So what's great? What are we measuring greatness about? What are we measuring? Right. Is it just numbers? Because a lot of numbers can mean you've been behind in a lot of games, but you haven't won a lot of games. So in my opinion, numbers don't quantify greatness. It quantifies that you got numbers. Because I can mention a lot of guys who've got crazy numbers, but they've got 10 losing seasons in a row, having never been to the playoffs and won in the playoffs. And those numbers are stacked that way because you're always from behind.
Right. And Will, I deal with that all the time, Will. We got to pay close attention to
what we say and how we break this stuff down, you know, and just stop looking from the outside at numbers and this and that. Look at what it takes to be great. And greatness doesn't come overnight. You know this. You played a long time. You were great. When you went up against a DB like Cornelius Williams or Deion or whatever else, you can't, all right, we got my work cut out today. I'm going against a great player. Some of these other dudes, you didn't even know their name. You didn't even know their name because you didn't care. But if they had one good game against you, what would they say? Oh, I'm great. I had a great game. I'm great. I balled out. And that's it.
It runs me crazy, Will. Will, it runs me crazy. These young boys, I get guys, Mike, I caught 150 more balls than you. Dude, I got 3 rings. You got none. I don't want to hear this.
And I caught him in the big games. And I caught him in the biggest games where you're at home chilling.
It trips me out, man.
Season, I was catching them.
That trips me out. But you said something that I want to go back to. You talked about making others around you great. And certainly in his young career, we've seen that Patrick Mahomes has some of that. But you were there in Tom Brady's young early years. Share with me some stories about the growth and watching him grow and seeing him in that incubator. I know I watch it, Willie. You do great interviews with him. You know, you can see, I'm not just saying this, man, really, man, that's why I love watching interviews. You can see the respect and admiration he has for you. You know what I mean? That he has for you. Where does that come from? Tell me about you guys' journey together.
He was our little brother. When he came in, the defense was the foundation of the team. It wasn't our offense. They wasn't scoring 100 points a game and wasn't whatever. So, and Tom wasn't the starter. But because he was passed over as a starter at Michigan, he came in with a chip on his shoulder. And guys like that who feel like they should have started or had an opportunity and it was taken away, when they get that opportunity, they'll fight you tooth and nail and do whatever it takes to keep that position. So when Tom came in, his work ethic was through the roof. Was he the best athlete? Was he in shape and this and that, the best technique and all that? No. But did he understand what he needed to do to get there? Yes. And he went to work. And he went to work in every way possible. And when he got his opportunity, he was ready. And he said that I'll never give it up. And he told the owner when he drafted him. He wasn't drafted in the first four or five rounds. He was drafted at the end of the draft. This is the best decision you ever made. And then I'm sure he was like, yeah, all right, I just paid Drew $100 million. Okay, kid, that sounds good. Hey, now what are we talking about? And the way he looked at the game and understood it and knew what he had to do, knew his strengths and knew his weaknesses. I think as a player, you have to understand that. And coaches have to evaluate and understand that about you so they don't put you in a bad situation. He worked his ass off in every capacity, from film study to weight room to whatever it took to put himself in position to do what he's doing right now. And he's even talking about working out harder next year, this offseason, so he can be in better shape and whatever next year at 44. Like, the chip never leaves, Mike. It never left. And when he got up under us, the defense, the guys that we had, he saw the blueprint. He saw what it took. He's been through some trials and tribulations already with getting his position back and forth and taking. So he's come in with the mindset and the attitude about it.
Well, you know.
It's self-made. When we talk about self-made,
right?
Tom Brady is self-made. Nobody gave him nothing. Nobody added nothing to him. Everything that man got and the way he looks and the way he's playing and what he's doing, he's taking this from here. He's looking at us through this here. Oh, you bringing in Alex Bureau? I'm going to get with Alex too. Whatever it took, he was doing that.
Right. Well you say something, Will, because you made me think about you guys had – I remember that defense, those names you talked about on that defense. So Tom was a scout team quarterback at first.
Yeah, he was a third team quarterback at first.
Right. So he was running all the other team plays. You know what I'm saying? He gets the cards. Okay, I see that. So he got a chance to work against you guys and see what a good defense looked like, and he's been tearing defenses up ever since. Well, you tell a story that I want people to hear about when Tom was so fired up getting ready to play it over the head, butting everybody, and you had to go in and get him. Tell me that story. Tell everybody that story.
Because that's what we did. The defense, the linebackers, the D linemen, we all headbutted each other, get fired up. And, right. Of course, Tom was one of us. And he had no filter, and he was so fired up, and he was ready to go. It's the Super Bowl. Remember, in that AFC Championship, he had got hurt. So he had hurt his ankle. So at first, until Belichick announced it in the team meeting, he was going back to Tom. It was up in the air. We didn't know who was going to start in the Super Bowl. But Belichick quietly put that to bed quick, going back to Tom. This is what he's doing. So when you're in that tunnel, Mike, you know this. Yeah. The biggest game in your life. They introducing you, man, and you in that tunnel and the national anthem's being sung and the fireworks and all that stuff is going on. You can't control your emotions and all that. But what you can't do is knock yourself out if you're the starting quarterback by headbutting linemen and linebackers. So I see Tom over there in the corner going crazy, headbutting everybody, and I go over to him. He immediately starts headbutting me, and I have to check him like, Tom, you're going to knock yourself out, man. You're going to get a concussion. Calm down. Like, calm down. We need you. Do not knock yourself out before the game starts. He was so hyped up, man, and he has that it about him. He's a tough dude. He has that it about him, too. Like, he don't. There's nothing soft about him. I know he models and does. Nah, he's one of us in the trenches. But I had to tell him, I don't need you to be one of us right now in the trenches, hair button. We need you for the game. We need you relaxed and calm. And don't knock yourself out, and man. And that, they always show that clip, man, before the Super Bowl when he's playing in it, and we talk about it and we laugh about it. But that's just time, man.
And that's what I love, though, Will. That's what I'm talking about, Will. You know, no matter what, and we know as a network, because I know you, when you work with us, we'll ask, man, can we get Tom? We with Tom, and you know they put their heat right on you. Will, right. Can we get Tom? And he's always said okay to you. And I tell people, I say, you got to see, this is a bigger picture. He respects what was done for him and what was shown to him. And now I see him reciprocating with guys like Antonio Brown.
Oh yeah.
And pulling them up. You know what I'm saying? Well, that right there goes a long way, man. And that's why he's sitting here today with a chance at winning another Super Bowl, Will. And let's break down this game, Will. How do you see this game falling loose? How do you see this game falling out?
I think, honestly, man, it's going to come down to which defense can play the best and get some takeaways. And the red zone is going to be important. When the Patriots, when Tom was there and they beat Kansas City, just a quick little snapshot of what happened. The Chiefs got in the red zone inside the 15, I think, three times before the half. Field goal, interception, okay? Chiefs, usually that's 21 points.
Right.
You got to limit opportunities for explosive teams when they get in the red zone from touchdowns to field goals. Patriots only end up winning that game by 3 points. You got to slow them down. The other thing is when I talk about defenses, okay, when the Giants beat the Patriots successfully those two times, they had a front four that didn't need a rush from another linebacker that didn't need a safety coming. They was getting home with four. The Bucs got four guys up front, four dudes up front that can get home and win the one-on-one with four rushers. Now, why is that important? That's important because you got a new left tackle, you got a new right tackle, and you got a new center. Wisnowski's going to center. You got Wiley going to right tackle, and you got the right tackle, Reimers, moving to left tackle. So when you're mixing and matching the O-line of guys that hadn't played and don't have that continuity for a number of games, that's going to create some problems, especially when you got Shaq Barrett and JPP and Vita Vea inside that can get home and win one-on-one, okay? Now, Chiefs are rare. They can get the ball out. They can do the short game, speed sweeps, bubble screens. They got all these explosive fast players and Robinson, Hardman, and Hill that they can get the ball out. But in Davis, he struggled last time they played. If you can jam these receivers, I'm not talking about all the time, but some of the time, jam them and allow Mahomes to pull the ball down and let the guys up front get home, you got a shot. But Todd Bowles, the coordinator for the Bucs, he's got to mix and match. He's got to be very smart. He's got to pick his chances when he wants to blitz, because he loves the blitz. One of the most blitzing defenses in the game. He loves them, but you got to pick and choose. You got to mix up coverages. You got to be physical at the line. You got to do all those. There's so many things that they have to do. Kansas City is explosive. You blow an assignment, it's a touchdown. You get mixed up in coverage, it's a touchdown. You get conservative, they pick you apart. They got a receiver at tight end. That DBs can't cover.
Right.
You know, they're not lacking in any position. They got a quarterback that can put it in any window you can think of. Any window you can design, he can put it in. On the move. 60 yards down the field.
You know why this is so great to hear? Because when I brought up that first Super Bowl for Tom against the New England against the Rams, the greatest show on turf. It's because this is like history repeating itself again. You know what I'm saying? Everything that people are saying about Kansas City, when you guys are the same things they were saying about the Rams when you went in and beat the Rams. And nobody gave you a shot. I was saying, because I was like, man, I want the Rams to win a back-to-back too. I didn't want them to win. And nobody gave them a shot, just like not many people are giving the Buccaneers a shot here. You know what I'm saying? It sounds eerily similar to that time for me.
Right. I respect both teams, and I think they're both really good teams. And I think if somebody wants to feel disrespected, it should be the Bucs receivers as well. Nobody's talking about the Bucs receivers. Everything's going about Tariq Hill and this and that or whatever. What about Evans? What about Godwin? What about Scotty Miller? You know, what about AB? You know, what about the two running backs, Fournette and Rojo? So what we used to do in this situation, Mike, when everybody's talking about the heir apparent to Tom Brady and Pat Mahomes and how great he is and how great Tariq Hill is and Sammy Watkins is coming back. He's going to be the guy to do whatever and all these pieces and Travis Kelce is unguardable. We used to sit back, man. We wouldn't say nothing to the media. We wouldn't say nothing. We'd just be salivating. Steam would be coming off our head and our coaches would continuously tell us, you guys don't even got a shot. Why show up? Why even show up? When we played those Indianapolis teams with Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne and Dallas Clark and Peyton Manning and all, we used to hear the same thing. And you wonder why we came out there angry, ready to tear them apart, because nobody gave us respect. Nobody gave us respect. Nobody's talking about the secondary for the Tampa Bay Bucs because nobody gives them a chance to cover these dudes. Nobody gives them a chance. They should feel disrespected. If you're talking to your team, you tell them, hey, they might as well give them the Lombardi Trophy, man. Y'all ain't got a shot. Y'all got here. Y'all got hot. And y'all doing all right. But Brady versus the kid? Nobody beats Mahomes. Dude lost one game in 26 games. Whatever. Nobody beats Mahomes. See, Brady knows that because we went through it. And he's filtering that to all the players in that locker room. Levante, you can't cover Kelce. Devin White. Nah, man, we ain't got a shot. All them dudes that you know got that alpha mentality.
Right. And all you need to do is tell them what they can't do.
Tell them what they can't do.
Just a whole different
thing. Tell them what they can't do. Tell them, keep telling them what they can't do. Just watch. It's going to be a great game. I want to see a great game, man. I want to see some points scored. I want to see some great defense. I want to see some great quarterback play. But it's going to come down to the little things. Special teams. Nobody even mentioned the special teams. Who's going to have the advantage in yards in special teams on the kickoff returns and punt returns? You know? Like, it could come down to a field goal. These great games come down to the field goal kicker, extra points and all these other different things. Like, there's a lot of other factors that's going to play a part in this game. We keep talking about the big names and all that. It's going to be somebody to come out of nowhere, Mike, that's going to have a hell of a game. We're going to be like, man, we didn't even mention this dude. We weren't even thinking about him. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you know, he's an explosive running back in the backfield. You know, is Bell going to be ready? Is Williams, Rojo, Fournette? It might, the weather. Have anybody talked about the weather being rainy and stormy and whatever? That's going to eliminate some of that speed, don't you think?
Yeah, for Kansas City, yeah. Yeah.
It might get physical. We might have to run the ball.
And right there. Now that's where you beat the Rams. You were more physical in the Rams. I've been with Marshall, and we talked about that time. Every time Marshall trying to come out of that backfield, you were hitting him. You were not giving him free release. Now, you talked about that earlier because the Bucs got to do some of this. You got to make sure that the Chiefs know we ain't going nowhere. We ain't going nowhere, and we're here to hit you right now. That, I think, will be a key factor if they can be physical with the Chiefs and get them out of their game.
Mike, nobody does that because they're so afraid of the speed. So right. You don't see a lot of defensive backs and linebackers jamming the Chiefs receivers. They're playing off 5, 6, 7, 8 yards off. Well, you're giving them free entry into their routes without being touched. Of course, the ball could come out quick. But if you're jamming these guys, whether it's two-man, whether it's cover two with a jam, whatever it is you're disguising, maybe man-to-man sometime. If you're jamming these guys, the ball can't come out quick. When the Patriots beat them up there in the AFC Championship, the ball couldn't come out quick. That's why the front four and five got home. With Van Noy and those guys was blitzing. They got sacks. They hit Pat Mahomes. He couldn't let the ball go. He had to pull it down. When he pulled it down, he tried to scramble. They was already on top of him. They was already on top of him. You can't be afraid. This is the biggest game in the last game of the season. This is it. You got to be physical, and that's what we did against the Rams. If we played the finesse game and tried to play off and do all those things, we had no shot in hell to beat them. We knew that. We knew where we were. Right. We knew where we were. But we wanted to turn our game into what they didn't like. We wanted to make it physical, ugly, and dark. because we know they didn't like that. We watched tape. We knew as soon as they caught the ball and they saw somebody, boom, they was getting down.
Right.
Said, oh, wow, they don't want to get hit. They don't like to get touched at the line. So what did Belichick do? The line of scrimmage, he moved up 3 yards. He gave them 3 to 4 yards head start. And that's how we practice all week long. We gave all the receivers and everybody a head start because they're that fast. They get into the route that fast. So we did a lot of little things. But we
Will, you mean to tell me y'all were in practice? And he said, we don't have receivers as fast as they have on the Rams.
We gave them a head start.
Starting 3 yards down the field on all routes.
We gave them a head start.
That's brilliant stuff. That's brilliant stuff. And this is the question I have. And I'll let you out there. That's the question right there. Can Bruce Arians make those kind of little adjustments and those kinds of decisions to flip this game? Because something like that, what you just said, is what flips this game. You know what I mean? Those small decisions within the game. Can Bruce Arians do that? It's great. Okay. But you're going to have to make these right now, right here, in the moment. Can Bruce Arians do what Bill Belichick did?
Absolutely. And Todd Bowles, I think, is qualified. He's smart enough. He showed a lot of different schemes and changes and disguises and all that. And Tom Brady can also tell him, hey, this is what our defense did. This is what we do. He has the personnel. He has the personnel to do it. You don't have to do it every single play, but we let it be known. So then, now that the back's coming out of the backfield, they didn't come right at us. They bowled way out. So now, if you bowling way out,
messing up that timing.
Right. Receivers, you see us over you sometime after getting jammed all game long. What do? They start dancing at the line and doing all that. We just back up. Mike, we in zone now. We just giving their illusion we're going to jam you. So you doing all this, and you running away from us to get back into your route. That's time. Those timing routes don't work now because you got to pull it down. But if you came across our face, best believe, within 5 yards, we was beating your ass up. You was getting hit, and they knew that. And when you caught the ball, you couldn't get down fast enough because we was hitting you anyway. And that's what we knew, and we was talking to them. It was a game within the game. So they had to go back and make some adjustments, what they did. They started to do different stuff to get the ball before we can get to them. And they made adjustments. And that is the other big part of this game. We're going to see some things that we haven't seen because they had 2 weeks to prepare. Right. Can these teams, can these coaches, can these players execute the in-game adjustments that they're going to have to continuously make? From serious to serious, from quarter to quarter to halftime. Because if you take away something, they're going to give you something different, especially the Chiefs. They got so much in the playbook, so much. You got to be able to adjust. And when you get in trouble, don't panic. Jump in the zone. That's what we did against the Rams. When they did something we didn't know, we just jumped in arrow, cover two, just to get out of it. Now we see it. Now we go to the sideline and we make an adjustment. But we're not going to give up a big play. We're going to protect ourselves on the back end no matter what. And that's what the Bucs got to do. No matter what happens, protect yourself against a big play. Make something we ain't seen turn into a 4 or 5 yard play. You got us on that. Okay. We'll figure that out, but we're not giving up a 50 yard touchdown. You got to dink and dunk that thing. Our mistake going to be a 10 yard play. It ain't going to be a 50 yard touchdown.
Right. And that's what the Buccaneers got to make sure they do. They keep the mistakes to just 10 yards. Well, I know you got to get the dinner, buddy. It sounds like you do believe enough in Tom to say Tampa Bay will get this victory Sunday. Where are you with that?
You know, on the show, we always give our picks on Sunday, on game day morning. And I'm excited for Tom. And I'm rooting for Tom. I think it's going to be extremely difficult to win this game. But, you know, we've thought that before when it came to Tom and winning certain games. It'll be legendary. History's already made as far as him, you know, having 6, him winning 7 at his own stadium. And I just think it's been a magical year. So, you know, I'm rooting for Tom to play well and have a lot of success, man. I want to see my brother, you know, continue – continuous legacy and keep pushing that history further and further out. So, you know, guys, it's not obtainable to a lot of guys, you know, that he's played against, that's playing the game now.
That's number 55 on Super Bowl 55. Willie, I know I held you back from your dinner appointment. I should let you go now, man. I appreciate you taking the time to fit me in, Will. And I needed to hear from the man that helped raise the greatest, the real GOAT. I'm not talking about young GOAT. I'm talking about the man that helped raise the real GOAT in Tom Brady. Appreciate you taking the time, buddy.
You got it, Playmaker. Thank you, man.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
Microsoft Teams is helping Priority Bicycles transform the way they work. After closing their New York City showroom, they started doing virtual visits on Teams. Now, people from all over the world can come into their showroom. Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams.
Wow. I told you, when we speak with 55 on Super Bowl 55, and we talk about Willie McGinnis, 55, that's 5-5, who helped raise Tom Brady, who's in his 10th Super Bowl. I don't know a lot about numbers. I leave that up to Cynthia Freeland on our network. But those are a whole lot of numbers that's matching up pretty well. 55 on Super Bowl 55. And 5-5 equals 10, which is right where Tom Brady is. Super Bowl. It's his 10th Super Bowl. Trust me now. I just feel like something's going to happen in this Super Bowl because of all of that right there that Willie was just talking about. Now, thank you, Willie, for your time. I want to make a turn here and just send my prayers towards Coach Marty Schottenheimer. Coaches, he's just been moved, from what I understand, to the hospice and at the hospital. And, you know, he suffers from Alzheimer's. This, I think, is the worst thing, the worst disease we have to deal with here in this world. I watched my mom go through it. I live with my mother-in-law right now. She lives with me, rather. She's going through it. And the reason I say I think it's the worst thing in the world is because my mom and my mother-in-law, just like Coach Schottenheimer, has spent their whole life pouring into people, helping people become who they are, because they were parents, they were teachers, pouring into people. And in the end, when they should be enjoying the fruits of all that they have done and watching all the people that they have helped and memorizing all the things and having and sharing memories on all of the moments, they cannot do that. In the end, my mom did not know her kids, 17 kids, and she couldn't remember them after putting all of that work into all of those kids. To me, it's just the worst thing in the world. And Coach, to you and your family, Coach, my most sincere prayers go out. And I ask God to hold all of you very tight and love all of you right as you go through these struggles. God bless you on your journey, Coach. Wherever that journey's taking you, I know you don't remember it all, but we do. And we thank you for the contributions that you have given to this game that we all love so much, Coach. We thank you, Coach. Godspeed, praying for you in your family. Before we go, let me just turn right back to this Super Bowl, because I'm looking forward to seeing you guys and chatting with you guys next week. Next week, what will we be talking about? Are we going to be talking about this so-called, I laugh first, young GOAT, Patrick Mahomes, who's phenomenal? Or are we going to be talking about the real GOAT, Tom Brady, who's beyond phenomenal? It's going to be interesting which one it is, and it will be going down Sunday right here in Tampa in Super Bowl 55. That 5-5, Tom Brady's in his 10th Super Bowl. I'm just telling y'all, hold on to that. Hold on to that. I'm not a betting man, but hold on to that to see what these numbers mean later. That's it for the MIP. We shall talk and discuss the results of this next week. God bless.
Thanks for downloading the MIP. Check out new episodes of the Michael Irvin Podcast every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.
Microsoft Teams is helping Priority Bicycles reinvent the way they work. When the pandemic hit, the bike shop had to close their New York City showroom. They found a way to reopen by doing virtual visits on Teams. Now, the team can meet with 2 or 3 times the number of customers than they could before. And people from all over the world can visit their showroom, learn more about their story, and others at Microsoft.com/Teams.